Gillingham are on the Wembley way.
Hello and welcome back to the Jules Fancast. Today we are joined by one of our ex-management team. He owns his own goalkeeping brand called Pro GK. He was the Gillingham goalkeeping coach in 2017 under Aidy Pennock. He then went on to West Ham Women, and now at Dagenham, we are joined by Dagenham's goalkeeping coach Glenn Johnson. Glenn, firstly, thank you for coming on.
No worries, James. Thanks for having me, mate. No problem, mate.
Glenn, we'll get straight into it then, mate. Let's talk about your playing days before you put the gloves on and help the keepers out. Your playing days. You started at Canvey Island, is that right?
It seems like a lifetime ago now. I was at Canvey. I was probably about 13 when I first went there in the youth teams. Sort of worked my way up through to the reserves, and then as a first team squad member. I wouldn't go any further than that other than a squad member though. but yeah, I was there from about 13 till 19.
And then you went on to a number of appearances for Maldon Town, Averley, Long Melford and Wingate and Finchley, didn't you?
Yeah, a few of them were loans. During my time at Canvey. But to be honest, after I left Canvey, so I got released, I think it was 2005 when they're in the National League. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of bounced around non-league clubs. And then to be honest, I started a window cleaning company.
Wow, okay.
I knocked football on the head and I just cracked on with the window cleaning. And didn't really have much interest to get back into football. Certainly not playing anyway. So that's how that was. But being at Canvey was an interesting situation because obviously at the time there was a lot of experienced ex-professionals there. You got people like who would have been Mark Stimpson was there.
Okay, RX manager.
Yeah. Steve Tilson, the old South End manager, Mickey Bennett, Neil Gregory. There were some real experienced ex-pros. So as a sort of a 15, 16, 17-year-old to be in and around that, it was excellent. But I think for a young player in that environment, obviously the club was sort of part-time, didn't really get the opportunity to play much senior football. So that sort of... affects your development and obviously you're not training full-time either. So probably for me quite a difficult situation to be in, but that situation I've obviously taken into my coaching and turned it hopefully into a positive.
Yeah, not only coaching, that was the first sort of time that your own keeper glove brand come along, which is still going now, which is Pro GK, and your own football academy as well. Talk a little bit about them too.
Yeah, so when I was at Canvey, I went back to Canvey, they'd taken voluntary promotion out of the National League because the owner had pulled his money. So they went into like the Ryman One North, and so I went back and I was looking at other ways to sort of bring an income in. So I started the glove brand. So that was, I think that was about 13 years ago now. And then off the back of that, I started the coaching. So we had a little goalkeeper academy with it. We probably had between sort of 15 and 30 young goalkeepers come in to the sessions on a weekly basis. And that sort of got me, that's my first sort of experience of coaching. Which sort of led me to where I am now.
Yes, speak about Pro GK a little bit more because uh, it's it's obviously hit off quite a bit, and you see a lot of pros nowadays using your gloves, don't you?
Yeah, we don't have as many as we used to be honest. If I'm being perfectly honest, it's a very saturated market. I think I've got a slight advantage in as much that we got in pretty early doors. Now, there's so many glove brands out there that it sort of dilutes the market. So it's something that I set up sort of 13 odd years ago. We've had some decent goalkeepers wearing the gloves over the years. I keep it at a manageable rate now because, you know, you've only got to look at the current climate. Nobody's buying goalkeeping gloves at the moment because they're more concerned about paying the bills.
Of course.
So yeah. I made a decision a few years ago that I was only going to sort of have the company be a certain size, and anything past that I wasn't particularly interested in. So it sort of runs itself, and the overheads aren't fantastically massive. So that sort of, in a situation like this where you haven't got anyone buying gloves, I've also not really got to worry too much because, well, I'm not bringing any money in, but I'm also not, there's no money coming out.
Yeah.
Where I think there's a lot of other brands out there, bigger brands, are probably quite concerned at the moment because they've got overheads and everything else that goes with it. So, but it's been enjoyable to see the brand grow, and I enjoy, you know, seeing goalkeepers at any level wear the gloves because, you know, I like to think that I've got half a clue about goalkeeping and what, you know, a decent glove is. That's where it is at the minute.
Let's go back in time. Your first kind of goalkeeping role as such was with Crystal Palace, Baltimore in the US in 2010.
Yep.
Speak a bit about that.
That was a really interesting situation that sort of come out of the blue, because I wasn't particularly qualified at the time, and I also had zero experience. But I was, you know, in the right place at the right time. A friend of mine was the goalkeeper there, a guy called Brian Rowland. So Brian's now the head coach at Temple University in Philadelphia.
Wow.
So he's, you know, fantastic coach, good human as well. And just, like I said, just being in the right place. I think I was over there I was like on vacation, seeing him. And I went to one of their games, and their equipment manager had resigned. So I just got talking to the head coach after the game and sort of introduced myself, you know, explained a little bit about what I do. And she said, look, you know, if you're ever looking for anyone to be equipment manager, I'm a goalkeeper coach as well, so, you know, I could double up. And then about, I don't know, 3 months later, I sort of got a call out of the blue, seeing if I'd be interested in that. And the next thing I know, there's a contract offer, and I'm on my way to the US Embassy in London, and I'm getting my visa and moving to America.
Wow.
And it was bizarre, to be honest, because if you would have said to me 6 months or a year before that, I'd be sort of setting my window clean around, renting my flat out and moving to America, I would never have believed you. You know, like, just even when I look back on it now, I think, how did that actually happen? But it did, and you know, the universe organised itself for me, and I got that opportunity. So I'm very grateful for that, because again, it's led on to other things down the line.
Yeah, you come back to Wolves home back in 2011 at Chelmsford City. What made you return home and come to non-league?
Yeah, it was a difficult one because at the time, obviously, it was just after the crash in sort of 2009, 2010. And the team itself originally was linked with Crystal Palace in London.
Yeah.
Those links were pretty much dead by the time I'd got there. I just thought my mate trying to text me to come on FIFA. So by the time I'd got there, those links had pretty much gone. And I think one of the owners had lost a load of money in property. So the team was struggling to finance itself. So yeah, really, the team folded. But as an experience, I mean, it was unbelievable, really. You know, because I look back and I look at some of the teams that we played. You know, there was Montreal Impact, Portland Timbers, Vancouver Whitecaps. We're flying everywhere, all over the US.
Wow.
And I'm 24 years old, and it was brilliant, and I had a very good time. So, yeah, so to then come back, I sort of come back to England, and I was like, I had a girlfriend there at the time, and it was really difficult because I didn't know what I was going to do. You know, I didn't really have a way to get back there. So I got in touch with Glenn Pennyfather, who has been my coach since I was about 5 or 6 years old, at Canvey, and he was manager at Chelsea City. And I knew Stuart Sell, who was the goalkeeper there, through the gloves. And I just volunteered. I went down there and just literally to get myself an opportunity and get my foot in the door. I volunteered for the first 6 months. Then the next season, they were able to give me like a little bit of like petrol money. And I got a full-time job with the academy there.
Wow.
Which was run by Kirk Game and Stuart Slater. So Kirk was quite an experienced sort of ex-non-league player. And obviously Stuart Slater played for Celtic and West Ham. And so two really good guys. And I'm really grateful to them because obviously they allowed me to get that opportunity to basically coach full-time at Chelmsford. So it was a really good opportunity for me. And yeah, so that's how that sort of presented itself. I was always trying to get back to America and everything, but when that job came up, I took it. And it was a really good learning curve for me as well, you know, sort of your first coaching job on a full-time basis.
Yeah, you did manage to return to the US in 2013 with Springfield. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so unfortunately, Glenn was sacked at Chelmsford for not making, for not getting promoted. I think Chelmsford had made the playoffs sort of 4 or 5 years on the trot, but couldn't quite take that next step to get into the National League. So Glenn was sacked, and I went with him. And then I sort of just went to the US for the summer and just volunteered with a team in Springfield, Missouri. I'll be honest, it came for a friend of mine that was going to go and play there, and he didn't actually end up going.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't know where Springfield, Missouri was. I'd never been there. But, you know, I've got lifelong friends there now as well. So, you know, that was, again, a really good experience. Sort of just soccer, you know, for college kids that wanted to play during the summer in the PDL. But, like I said, really good experience. You never know who you're going to meet on your journey, and I'm really pleased that I put myself in that position because I met some wonderful people off the back of it.
Do you think those sort of experiences that you had with Baltimore and Springfield definitely helped you with who you are today?
100%, because especially the first one when I moved to Baltimore, like, I'd never been away from home, really. You know, I'm quite close, obviously, with my family and my dad especially, and at the time my nan and granddad, and they're both alive. And, you know, you've got all your friends in the area that you grew up, which, you know, a lot of people know I'm from Southend and I'm very proud of that. And to then sort of move away, I mean, going a little bit deeper, my mum, bless her, passed away when I was a kid. So I've always looked at it that, you know, I've got the opportunity to go and do things, and she didn't. So when an opportunity presents itself, you should probably take it. And you know, I think at the time my dad wasn't too keen on me going, but I just said to him that if I don't do this, I'm going to regret it. And I'll be honest, it was the best thing that I've ever done, because when you're 24 and you're 5,000-6,000 miles away from home, you know, you have to grow up quite quickly. It probably sped that up for me, you know.
Yeah, an opportunity did present itself. Sorry for my pronunciation. Is it Pun in India, Pune? Pronounce it for me, Glenn.
I think it's Pune or Pune.
Pune. That was later in 2013 in the August.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, that sort of just come out of the blue, and it's amazing in life that, you know, and I've probably been the world's worst at this. You always want something better, and you always want to achieve more, and, you know, looking at what the next step is. But sometimes these things sort of come out of the blue, and when you least expect it. And I think, you know, as I've said earlier, the universe works in really interesting ways. But yeah, I was in Springfield, and I got a call from a guy called Eddie Rock, who at the time was an agent. So Eddie's now working for Chicago Fire in the MLS, and he's quite high up on the corporate side of things there. But he got in touch, and he said, listen, there's an opportunity with a team in India. Would you be interested? And I'll be totally honest, and I didn't know anything about India or football in India. I wasn't even 100% sure that they had professional football. I don't mean that disrespectfully, but obviously it's not like a footballing powerhouse. So, you know, but I interviewed over Skype. The head coach was a guy called Mike Snowy, who is a Dutch fella, who had been out in China and was, I think he was assistant coach at Panathinaikos, so he's coaching back in Holland at the moment. But yeah, so I had my interview with him. Obviously, they must have liked, you know, what I said and what they saw. And the next thing, I'm flying back to London to get my visa, and literally, I'm off to India.
Wow!
it was as quick as that.
What was it? What was it that head coach had said to you to convince you to go over there?
I needed a job. That was it. I needed, you know, it wasn't looking like I was going to get a job in England, to be honest, because at the time I didn't really have much of a reputation, and didn't have a massive amount of coaching experience, you know. So was I going to get a job in England full time? Very unlikely. And I saw this as a stepping stone and a really good opportunity to continue to learn how to be a full-time goalkeeper coach. And I'll be honest, at the time, like, I would have pretty much gone anywhere. And I think, you know, moving to India, I think that shows that, you know.
Yeah, that is dedication.
Yeah, well, listen, it's like anything else. If you want to be successful in what you do, you've got to put yourself out. And I've got that mindset, so that's what I did. And again, I don't regret it. It was extremely difficult at times being out there, but what a wonderful experience.
Yeah, and then you was out there for roughly about a year and a half, wasn't you?
I was just over a year. Mike didn't have his contract renewed. And I'll be honest, by that time, I'd had enough of it.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, when you're out there and you're living there day to day, it is quite draining. And I think once Mike made his decision that he was going to go back, that had made my mind up for me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I come back. But, I mean, when we was out there, we was in the Asian Cup. So we got to go to... we played teams in Singapore. We went to Burma, Hong Kong.
Wow.
So, you know, you're traveling around all these different countries in Southeast Asia. Fantastic experience. But not only from a football side of things, but also from a human side of things. Like, you see how, not so much Singapore and Hong Kong, but obviously in India and in Burma,
how people live and what they've got and what they haven't got, and you sort of realise that actually what you've got everything you need. When I come back from India, I remember the day I got back, I literally dropped my bags off and I took a walk along the seafront, and it was a beautiful day, and I just remember breathing in all that fresh air, and I thought, yeah, this is living. It was brilliant.
Yeah, you did come home in 2015. You got the move to local side Braintree. Side for you, obviously. How did that come about?
Well, I'll be honest, when I come back, I didn't have a job. So I literally, I had to go out window cleaning with a friend of mine, sort of 2 or 3 days a week, just to sort of get a little bit of money together and keep me ticking over until an opportunity presented itself again. I saw that Danny and Nicky Cowley had gone to Braintree.
Yeah.
I didn't know Dan or Nick, but I got Dan's number and just rang him up, introduced myself, asked if they were looking for a goalkeeper coach. And I met Danny and Nicky at a harvester in Rayleigh.
Wow.
Had a chat, and that was that. They said, come on board.
What was it like working with them too? Because, of course, they've gone on to be highly successful. Of course, they're managing Huddersfield Town in the Championship right now.
Yeah.
Did you know from working with them at Braintree how good they were going to go on and be?
You could see it straight away. You know, the way that they deal with the players, how organised they are. It was clear to me that they were going to go on to bigger and better. Would I have said Championship? Maybe not at that time, but clearly going to be full time in the Football League, you know. But I mean, they've done fantastically well, and you know, I think they really deserve it because they work extremely hard and they're good people as well.
Yeah, you spent roughly about a year there. You then went on to Boreham Wood in 2016. Speak a little bit about Boreham Wood.
Well, yeah, so just backtracking, obviously Dan and Nick went to Lincoln.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I didn't end up going with them. Braintree were obviously part-time, and I'll be honest, at Braintree I wasn't really getting paid any money whatsoever. So it wasn't something that I was going to be able to do long-term. I think you make your own luck with certain things in life. So I got the phone number of Luke Garrard, who's the manager at Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Rang him up, introduced myself, said that I was looking for an opportunity. I heard that they were looking for a goalkeeper coach. Went and met him. Obviously, the meeting conversation went quite well. Agreed, you know, some sort of terms, and then started working there. And again, I really enjoyed it. I think that, you know, Boreham was a really well-run club, run by good people. I enjoyed working with Luke. Junior Lewis was there. So Junior's brilliant. So he was great to work with. Goody was there as well. So, yeah, again, I really enjoyed it, and it was another opportunity to gain sort of more experience working with, you know, full-time professional goalkeepers at a good level. So just more experience.
I think since obviously we've spoken about where you've got up to now, I think your next move probably was deserved for all your hard work, because you got the move and you got the call from League One Football Club Gillingham.
Yeah.
Tell me how that come about.
Well, it's quite interesting. I think in life, as I said a couple of times, you do, if you work hard, then you do make your own luck. So I was back in Baltimore on holiday, staying at my pal Brian's in the off season, and Junior Lewis rang me and just said, "Listen, there might be an opportunity with Gillingham. Peter Taylor's been on the phone," and although Pete is from Southend, I didn't know him personally.
Yeah.
So I was sort of like, oh, okay, fair enough. You know, he said, no, I really think there could be an opportunity. So I said, well, you know, what do I need to do? He said, well, I'll be in touch. So a week or so went on, and then June got back in touch, and he said, look, I think they'd be interested to speak to you. So I said, right, well, I'm going to fly home then. So I literally booked a flight, got back to Heathrow, round to Southend, got in my car, and went round to Jill's and met Pete, and had the interview as such, met AD, and then they said, yeah, we'll offer you the job. And that was that. So,
wow.
As quick as that.
Of course, let's speak about Jill's in quite a chunk. Of course, you worked with Thomas Holy, Stuart Nelson, Tom Hadler at the time. What was it like working with those guys?
Don't forget Steve Arnold as well.
Yeah, Steve Arnold, of course, yeah.
And in fairness, Louis, the youth team goalkeeper,
yeah,
he was part of it as well. What was it like? I think when I first went there, I mean, so I'll give you an example of where I was at. My brother's a Southend season ticket holder.
Yeah.
Growing up, supported Southend. So, similar sort of size club to Gillingham. Good fan bases, etc., etc. I think when I went there was a bit of negativity towards that from Gillingham supporters.
Yeah.
Because they're looking at it and they're going... I remember my dad said to me, oh, I was reading something on Kent Sport Online, or Kent Online, and he said, don't read it because you're getting pelters.
Wow.
God, I haven't even started the job yet and I'm getting sick from people. But it was basically along the lines of, you know, we've got a non-league goalkeeper coach. And I read it, and I thought, oh, that's just spurring me on to do an even better job now.
Yeah.
You know, because, I can understand it, like people probably looking at it and, oh, we've got a non-league goalkeeper coach, but there's lots of good coaches, really capable coaches working in non-league football, in the National League and National South and probably lower, that haven't had an opportunity to show what they can do at a higher level. And on the flip side of that as well, there's also coaches that are working in the pro game, in the football league and higher, that are not very good at their job. But they've been able to get themselves an opportunity. It's a lot of things in life, it's who you know as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So I understood why at the time I was getting that stick. But I knew as well that once I'd sort of been able to get my teeth into the job, that I'd be able to change people's opinions. Even there was the thing pre-season, the supporters evening.
Yeah, yeah, I remember
and,
that.
And the first question that somebody asked...
I was there that night.
Well, then you know what I'm going to say. So they said it was something along the lines of, no disrespect to the new goalkeeper coach, and I'm literally sitting there on the stage
in front
of all them people with the chairman, the manager, Pete Taylor, and most of the staff. And this fellow was like, yeah, I think no disrespect to the new goalkeeper coach, but I think Stuart Nelson should be goalkeeper coach.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I was like, oh, jeez, this is going to go really well for me. But again, listen, people are entitled to their opinions, but I thought it was just a little bit like, I've just come into the job.
Yeah, give me a chance.
At least give me a chance.
Yeah.
And then in 6 months, if we're chucking goals in for fun, then you can ask for Nels to be goalkeeper coach. it was good to work with the boys. Nels, I've got to say, Nels is probably, and I still speak to all of them now. I'm actually on a coaching course with Nels at the moment, which has been quite interesting.
I bet it has.
But he's easily the best player I've worked with in terms of his day-to-day, just relentless at what he does. You know, like, fit, strong, does everything that's asked of him. So to work with somebody like Nels was brilliant. Obviously, Thomas, I think
it was a difficult situation for Thomas.
Yeah.
I don't think... I know myself, when you're abroad and you're on your own, you need support.
Yeah.
So I was pleased that I was able to do that for him. You know, even little things, without trying to blow my own trumpet, but just to give people an idea of the things that are not seen. I went to his flat, got his internet sorted out, you know, got him a TV sorted out, and all these little things to help somebody away from the football club to try and live a normal life and feel comfortable.
Wow.
So, you know, they're the things that people don't see that goes on. But again, listen, because of the experience that I had when I was abroad, I knew exactly what Thomas was going through.
Yeah.
So, you know, I felt obliged to sort of try and help him, which then hopefully he repays you by putting it in training and then ultimately with his performances, which, you know, I'd like to think he did.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about Thomas, because you talk about at the start that, of course, people questioned like your background and where you were coming from. I think certainly in my time that we've had a goalkeeping coach, I think you're probably, if not one off, if not the best goalkeeping coach we've had in a very, very long time. And I think...
Well, you've got a very good one at the minute.
We have Simon Royce. We have. I meant before Simon come in.
Yeah.
Do you think that? Could you see that there was a turning tide between you and the Jules fans and that connection? And do you think with Thomas that helped with him playing so well, that all the hard yards that you both put in?
I think that what helped my connection with Jules fans and that relationship is that I'd like to think that they could see that ultimately I'm just exactly the same as them. You know, like I said, my brother's season ticket holder at Southend. I grew up watching Southend. So I'm just a normal punter that is reasonably good at coaching goalkeepers. You know what I mean? So I think that probably helped. The fact that, you know, I can be a little bit loose on the social media at times, speaking my mind. I'm not sure that anyone's particularly interested or bothered what I've got to say, but I still say it. I think so. That interaction with dual supporters through the social media, I think that helped. And again, I don't see people in football any different to, you know, a normal Joe Bloggs. That's the way I see it. You know, you take now, for example, we're all in this sort of turbulent time. I'm feeling it. You'll be feeling it. The general public feels it. A Premier League footballer feels it. Probably doesn't potentially feel it as much, but, you know, we're all human. And I think life's just about human connections, and the connection that I made with Jules fans and the connection that I made with Thomas, I think it was all positive stuff, you know?
Yeah. Let's finish off about Jules. Of course, it was a very, very difficult time. Like you say, with obviously AD. And it was a year that Jules fans kind of struggled to connect with the club almost.
Yeah.
What do you think, without obviously going into what you can't go into, what do you think was wrong that year that the club got wrong, and why do you think it didn't go as well as it all hoped?
I think it's a tricky one because League One is a very competitive league, and you know, there's some big clubs in it, or that there certainly was that year. Obviously, you've got your Sunderlands and people like that, but that season, Blackburn were in it. And, you know, it's really, I think people's expectations grow every single year. And I don't always think that's realistic. So I think it was a difficult situation. I don't know, obviously, the ins and outs of it, because I just, used to go in and just take care of the goalkeepers.
Of course, yeah.
You know, everything else is, you know, going on is above my pay grade. And I, the things that I can't affect, I don't particularly worry about.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult one for me to answer. I think we did the best that we could in the parameters that we had, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course.
And I think that, you know, it was a difficult time for the football club. But in those sorts of times, that's when you need everyone to come together.
Yeah.
And I think that happened because ultimately we stayed in League One.
Yeah, we did.
You know, so that has to be seen as a successful season. I mean, and don't forget, there was some really, at times, some really good performances. And some, like, you know, you think about beating Portsmouth away.
Yeah.
Fantastic. You know, with all them Jules fans behind the goal there. And so I don't think we can all just look at the negatives. I think that we have to bear in mind that there was some positives as well. And I think the football club had learned from any perceived mistakes and is obviously, you know, looks like it's in a healthy position at the moment. So, you know, I think they're the positives that can be taken out of it.
Definitely. Yeah, of course, you moved on from Gilles in 2018. You went to West Ham Women. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was really disappointed to leave Gillingham, to be honest, because, as you know, we've discussed there, I felt that I personally had a connection with people at the club, the supporters and the goalkeepers, etc. But, you know, things sometimes don't necessarily always work out as you'd like them to. And I just had to make a decision on what my future was, because everything was just up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I didn't deal particularly well with that. I'd probably deal better with it now, with experience. But yeah, so there was a couple of inquiries from some League Two clubs, which didn't really work for me. And I don't mean that in a sort of blasé type of way, but it just, in terms of distance and things like that at the time, it didn't work. My name was poorly, and I just didn't want to be that far away from her if anything happened. So I decided to go down the route of West Ham, and it was quite an exciting sort of opportunity, because I'd never really coached women before. And it was a new project that Matt Beard and Jack Sullivan was setting up. And it was, like I said, it's quite exciting to be working at the very top of the women's game at a massive club like West Ham, which was an opportunity that I quite fancied. And I got involved with it. I was there for 6 months, thoroughly enjoyed it. And if the opportunity to work with Pete Taylor hadn't arisen, I'd probably still be at West Ham now. But obviously Pete had given me the opportunity at Gillingham, and obviously I've got a massive amount of respect for Pete and what he's done in the game. So when he gave me the opportunity to go with him to Dagenham, I sort of jumped at that. So it cut short my time at West Ham. But overall, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, we'll talk about where you are presently at Dagenham with of course ex Gillingham manager and director of football Peter Saylor. Talk a bit about how you're doing right now.
Well, yeah, so Pete's not there anymore, unfortunately. So Pete got the sack.
Oh, of course he did. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
A month ago. So
yeah.
Darryl McMahon's come in.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So you know, it's like anything else. You adjust to new people that you work with. I think I'm quite flexible in that regard, and you know, as I said earlier, my main focus wherever I am is taking care of the goalkeepers, and that's all I really concern myself with. So it's been interesting working with a new management team, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Again, you know, I've only got the greatest of respect for Pete, because twice now he's given me opportunities of employment. So I'm obviously very, very grateful to him for that. But I quite enjoy being at Dagenham. you know, I think it's a nice club. It's well run. A smaller fan base than Gillingham, obviously. But the club's got real ambition and would like to get back into the Football League. Working with two really good goalkeepers, and feel quite, you know, pleased at Dagenham.
Yeah, I mean, that has certainly been an interesting story, Glenn. You thought?
I'm not sure if anyone's going to be that interesting.
I mean, to be fair, I've sat here for about it's just hit 40 minutes, and yeah, I can't until you obviously tell us the stories. You can't quite believe how much hard work you've put in to get the experiences that you've had and where you've been, and like you said, is that you kind of create your own luck at times, and that's certainly what you've done throughout your career. So, fair play to you, and yeah, I think I say from all behalf of Jules fans is that it was a shame. It was a big shame to see you go, a massive shame.
Yeah, I was pretty gutted, to be fair.
Are you surprised to see how the Jules are doing now, or are you looking kind of to see what kind of coaching staff they've got right now, and is it not really a shock? What are your thoughts?
No, I don't think it's a surprise. I think they've got an experienced manager and assistant. Obviously, in terms of the goalkeeping coach, you've got Simon Royce, who's an ex-Southend legend, who, you know, I grew up watching at Rootsall. So the goalkeeper's in good hands, and it looks like the lad there's doing really well. It's good to see Joe in and around the first team as well. So, no, I think it's, you know, it's all positive stuff for Gillingham going forward, and long may that continue. I think it's a fantastic football club, and as I said, my year there was a brief year, but loved every minute of it, and it was an absolute privilege to be there. And you know, you never know what the future may hold. Our paths might cross again. You never know.
Well, yeah, let's hope so. That is a wrap for the Jules Fancast. Thank you, Glenn, for coming on and giving us your time.
Hopefully, I've not sent anyone to sleep yet.
No, I'm sure you haven't. Appreciate you listening, guys. This is the second podcast in our new series of getting ex-players and management on. Appreciate your support. Keep liking and keep listening to our Fancast. Obviously, in difficult times at the moment, we're trying to bring you as much different content as possible, and hopefully this plugs gaps and helps with your boredom. And yeah, appreciate it, Glenn. Appreciate your time.
No worries. Thanks, James.